Hello and welcome to Talking Global Infrastructure, the podcast brought to you from the Global Infrastructure Investor Association. I'm Simon Montague, Director of Corporate Affairs here at GIIA, and today we're going to be talking about two things. One is the current scale of investment by UK pension funds in UK infrastructure, how much there is, and what potential there is for lots more of it. And two, how we educate UK citizens about how their individual pension savings are in fact underpinning the very fabric of society and are invested in the essential networks we all need. Now, I've got two experts with me to shed light on these two themes. Ted Frith, who's Chief Operating Officer at GLIL Infrastructure. Founded in 2015, GLIL is a partnership of UK pension funds from across the country, helping their members tap into stable, inflation-linked returns from investment in a growing portfolio of assets spanning renewable energy, water and ports, trains, hospitals and schools.
Hello, Simon. Thank you for inviting me to join you today.
That's my pleasure. And Surinder Tor, who in the same year founded Argent Infrastructure Partners, an asset management firm which is today invested in wind and solar energy, biomass and biogas power plants, and lots more besides, and who in a recent article has argued that it's time for UK pension funds to seize the opportunity of greater investment in infrastructure.
Thank you, Simon. And yes, we're focused on European mid-market infrastructure. Delighted to be here.
Let's get into that first theme of the scale of investment by UK pension funds in UK infrastructure and the potential for increasing it. Ted, I think it's fair to say that GLIL is something of a leader in this area. What are the principles behind how you go about investing ordinary workers' pension savings in infrastructure?
Thanks, Simon. I mean, GLIL was set up on a very simple premise. Greater Manchester Pension Fund and London Pensions Fund Authority felt that they could achieve a more appropriately constructed portfolio for the pensioners' interests than there was currently offered by the many commercially available and independently managed offerings that were available at the time. And GLIL's based on the economics of collaboration or pooling. So it's not just pooling capital to have a larger war chest, if you like, to go and buy the assets, but it's also about pooling the resources within the various pension schemes to give you the scale that you need to be involved in this business. It requires a number of people. Originally, there were four of us in 2019. Today, the investment team numbers over 20. Being in charge of our own destiny, if you like, in terms of having the choice to choose what assets to put into the portfolio, we're also able to buy assets that we know our members may care more or less about.
Surinder, more generally, I think it's fair to say, and I hope I'm presenting your argument correctly, that you've argued that UK institutional investors lag well behind their overseas peers with allocations by domestic investors to infrastructure being what you called strikingly low. Why is that?
Yes, Simon, I think it's been an issue that's been a long time coming. Corporate defined benefit pension schemes, surpluses in the sort of mid-90s, took those surpluses, took contribution holidays. Then as markets corrected post the sort of early 2000s, they found the cost of those schemes were high. And actually their response to that was to close schemes to new members. So those schemes then, many years later, moved to de-risk and managed sort of sponsor exposure. And really what that meant then, they shifted away from equity allocations and moved more and more to sort of bonds. DC schemes have been slow to sort of take up that gap. And I guess Nest has been a good example where that has happened. But really, it means the capital that's been available, with the exception of examples like GLIL, from pensions into equity more broadly and into sort of private markets and infrastructure more specifically, have been more and more limited as each year has gone by.
Ted, hearing that, what do you think is the potential for UK pension funds to further increase their investment in UK infrastructure? How can we fix the plumbing, if you like, to unlock these pools of capital?
Firstly, I think there is a very large demand for capital investment in infrastructure in the United Kingdom. We're very aware that there is enormous investment required into energy generation to help us move into the energy transition and towards a net zero future. We're looking at nuclear power. There's electricity grids that need bringing into the current decades or century, arguably. And there's clearly a lot of requirement to invest in our transport networks, our schools and our hospitals. Clearly, the government doesn't have enough capital to invest and deliver all of the projects where there is this demand. One of the ways of delivering some of these projects will have to involve capital from other sources, from the private sector. And one of the obvious sources of that is UK pension funds that clearly have cash in some cases that are looking for assets of this type. The key point for me is for pension funds, and indeed any other investors, is that they need to be drawn to the UK and what it has to offer investors because it's attractive and it makes sense. Therefore, what can the government be doing in order to focus the minds of pension funds on the attractiveness of the United Kingdom? I think there's a few things that need fairly urgent attention. One of them is clarity around policy in a number of sectors. I think it's arguable, we would argue that again, in a number of sectors, we think it's time to review how the economic regulation of some of those sectors takes place. The final point I would make, Simon, and I think this comes back to what you mentioned in the introduction, I think we need to reset the debate on private ownership of public assets today, as many of these assets are indeed owned by pension funds and not by some rapacious financial predators that seem to have attracted very bad press in certain cases. And arguably, pension funds are long-term patient owners of assets. They're not looking for outsized short-term financial gains. They're looking for modest returns linked to inflation. And in many ways, they're the ideal owners of UK infrastructure assets. But there needs to be an acceptance that a reasonable return paid to investors is acceptable and is not something that should be publicly decried at every opportunity. And at the moment, we find ourselves in a situation where it's not always acceptable to be seen to be making a return on our investment of pension funds capital.
Surinder, if I may turn to you on this, because you did write this strong-minded article in one of the trade magazines very recently. What more do you think government and regulators could do to change the picture in the sort of way that Ted is talking about?
Well, I think to Ted's point directly, there needs to be more a longer term view rather than sort of the short term knee jerk reaction to when, you know, there are one or two highly sort of publicized examples of things that have gone wrong and people immediately forget the sort of 30, 35 years of where infrastructure replacement capital has been forthcoming and several billions of pounds have been invested across transport, utilities, renewables, all without sort of direct public sort of subsidy or cost. I think the structurally for pension funds and other investors, the encouragement to have that available capital, I think for DC schemes, the level of contributions and therefore the size of the pots of capital available to invest could easily be increased. When you look at sort of superannuation rates in other countries, they are significantly higher. DB schemes as well. Is there a role for occupational schemes, sort of DB 2.0, where not necessarily of a final salary nature, but encouraging greater pension provision and therefore having the available capital to invest in that infrastructure, and then insurance companies, with their solvency limitations, are very reluctant to put in policy capital into infrastructure because of the high capital charges they face. So there are a number of areas where government could enable and encourage a more savings to be made towards pension, which is needed for sort of UK PLC. But then once that is established, then saying, well, what should the model allocation be? And almost amplify what direct investors like TED and Co. are doing, but also in ensuring that the example that Nest has provided for DC schemes could also be extended.
I'm conscious that we're having a bit of a UK conversation at the moment. Of course, we're a global organisation, and this podcast has a global audience. And Surinder, I think I'm right in saying you've been responsible for managing assets worldwide in the course of your career. So hopefully you've had a chance to look around in a few other markets. On the premise that that is the case, that you've had that opportunity, what learnings do you think we can take from other countries in the forms of best practice, whether it's North America, Europe, or Australasia, to increase pension fund investment in infrastructure in the UK?
That's certainly correct, Simon. I mean, when you look at the examples, when infrastructure was first sort of talked about as an investable sector over in Europe, it was the Australians and then the Canadians coming probably over 20 years ago into the UK and Europe. But similar examples in the Nordics and in the US. I think the key lessons from overseas have been they have much larger funded schemes. So there is a scale benefit to have a direct investment team. As Ted described, you do need to have a minimum scale and that expertise in-house. You need a higher level of allocation to private markets and infrastructure within those schemes. And again, recognizing the benefits as alternates to sort of fixed income, providing good risk-adjusted returns over a long term, and the role that that plays within a pension scheme. And I think the biggest point is that this is really a win-win, because you'll then find that your stakeholders, your pensioners, are enjoying the benefits of the returns that they are receiving on those investments. But also infrastructure is improved significantly. If you look at the majority of large-scale infrastructure in the UK, a significant amount of it is owned ultimately by overseas pension plans. And that is, they've sought investment overseas once they have filled out investment in their own domestic markets.
So Ted, Surinder is saying that there are overseas pension funds alongside you. What do you see around the world that catches your eye as best practices, as things we can learn here in Britain?
I think the key thing, the point that Surinder was making around scale, it's important. And almost all UK pension schemes are too small to make a difference on their own. It's complex. It requires significant headcount and quite a lot of capital. So many of our pension schemes are much smaller than comparable overseas institutions in Canada, Australia, the Nordics, etc. And actually, one of the reasons that GLIL was set up in the way that it was to address that issue by pooling capital and, as I said earlier, also people. So our investment team contains members of more than one institution working together to identify investments and to manage the portfolio. So that's been great. We've got six local government pension schemes and Nest in the portfolio. We're currently at around £3.5 billion. We're about to launch what we're internally trailing as GLIL 3.0, where we feel comfortable now that what we've been doing has been effective, and we want to grow the portfolio and make it a larger player in the marketplace. So we will be in the coming months looking to identify new members who'd appreciate working with us and would fit the mold of what we're trying to do.
Well, I think for a few minutes there, we've talked about the scale of overseas pension fund investment in the UK. And of course, that ultimately means millions of pension savers around the world, little do they know it, having their money invested in the UK, and the potential for more UK pension funds to do the same. And in fact, our research suggests that more than 11 million UK pension savers are invested in UK infrastructure already through something like more than 150 UK pension funds. And yet somehow the motivation for investing private capital in infrastructure sometimes seems to come under suspicion, for instance, by the unions, as in Australia and in the US, for instance, or indeed for criticism, as I think those of us in the UK will be aware, criticism as in the UK water sector having its critics. Ted, your fund acts for millions of pension savers. To what extent do citizens understand do you think, the benefits of having their money invested in infrastructure?
I think today there's probably very little understanding, speaking very generally. But I think there are people trying to make a difference. I've seen some excellent materials that Nest produce on a regular basis to engage with their members directly to show what private markets investments means. And I know they've been operating field trips to go and see some of the investments that they've got. And people can actually almost get up close and personal and start to see what it actually means to own these assets. So that's very positive. And I think a number of our other members are doing similar things as well. What I think is less clear is that these investments that are regularly in the media, not always for the best of reasons, are indeed largely owned by pension fund investors. And that is important, I think, because we can start to have a conversation and explain to pension fund savers that, you know, they are helping to create jobs in the economy. It could be locally, it could be somewhere else in the country. They're also fostering growth in the economy, as well as social benefits. So we see some funds out there specializing, creating very regional opportunities for investing in infrastructure. We have a more national approach, but ultimately pension fund savers enjoy traveling around on new transport, and they'd rather be treated in a new hospital rather than in one that looks like it's seen better days. And so, you know, pension fund capital is playing an important role there. What we are seeing today, owning assets through GLIL, is that we are in a position where we can actively engage with the operators of the businesses that we have got in our portfolio. And therefore, this is an opportunity as well for pension funds, for people who are saving for their pensions, to actively engage with these companies in a way that they probably don't realize that they can. You mentioned just then, Simon, about the water sector. There are a lot of difficulties that need to be addressed in that sector, but pollution and the issues around treatment of sewage have obviously been very prominent in the news. We've probably spent more time engaging with Anglian Water than we have with any other asset in our portfolio, and working in the background, out of the media, behind the scenes, explaining that we're not happy with performance as it relates to their environmental targets, and working to put in place a new program for dealing with pollution within the Anglian Water region. So I think that's a very good example where we can play a meaningful role, and I think we need to explain that more clearly to the pensioners who are saving through the schemes that are investing in GLIL.
Surinder, what's your take on this? Because it's certainly something which intrigues me, is some of the criticism the water industry in the UK gets. Having said that, I don't want to spend too much time around the water industry. But there is probably a shortage of social understanding of what infrastructure investment does and what it means. To what extent do you think our industry can convince the public, inform the public, that this is actually good for them at two levels, both the infrastructure they get and their retirement and income in later life?
I think, as Ted's touched on, I think there does need to be more engagement, and I think more sort of almost celebration of what that sort of private capital has brought to infrastructure in the UK and elsewhere. If you look at the amount of investment that's been made, I don't think there's an appreciation that improvement in rolling stock, energy networks, and even water. But I think there's a reluctance to have sort of an open debate around all of those aspects. And it's very easy when things go wrong, whether that's at sort of schools or at wastewater companies and what have you, and to sort of throw bricks at investors and companies. But there's no way, when you think about public finances in most Western countries, that the level of replacement capital on aging infrastructure and new capital on renewables and energy transition and fiber to the home could be funded by the public purse. It would be unaffordable. So I think there's a greater amount to do in taking people the public along that journey and also explain the wins and the improvements in service that have been achieved. And at the same time, I think probably an understanding that, you know, a profit motive is not a bad thing. It's you know, and those profits are going to pay pensions in the future. It is a win-win, particularly if returns on those investments are well understood and fair, particularly as I think Ted described long-term patient capital. This is not about making supernormal profits in the short run. This is saying delivering improved services, higher quality assets, better customer service, but also saying, well, that comes with a cost, and that cost can secure the sort of the financial security of the next generation. But I think there needs to be more to celebrate what has been achieved, accepting, as Ted described, there are many obstacles to efficient deployment of capital, rather than just pointing out sort of failures when they do occur, because that's always makes the news much more interesting.
Thank you very much indeed. Yes, so there is a point, isn't there, about infrastructure? Everybody wants it and nobody wants to pay for it. Nevertheless, thank you both for setting out some thoughts on how the public need to be better informed about the value that comes from private capital being invested in infrastructure, and indeed your thoughts on UK pension funds and other pension funds overseas investing more in UK infrastructure. Anyway, at that point, that does bring us to the end of this episode. And thank you both for sharing your thoughts on the importance, as I say, of pension fund investment in infrastructure, ways we can secure more of it, and how we can help citizens better understand the value of doing so. Ted, Surinder, thank you both.
Simon, thank you very much for having me on the podcast. It's been a pleasure to join you and Surinder.
Simon, well, really appreciate the opportunity. I think it's critical that more and more people understand the role of infrastructure and the opportunities for pension funds.
Well, thank you both. And thank you too, of course, to our listeners for joining us for this episode of Talking Global Infrastructure. We hope you've enjoyed it. And if you have, do tell your friends. And also, if you haven't done so already, do subscribe to our channel on Spotify and iTunes, and follow the Global Infrastructure Investor Association on LinkedIn for more infrastructure insights. Goodbye.